T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
Set up for Mosley and Witherspoon to, again, get it done. Look, the Jets got other pros, too. There's no doubt about it. But their depth chart is being as tested as the 49ers' depth chart. And if you believe that San Francisco's just got the better team to begin with, the better coach team to begin with, the more experienced team, the more cohesive team, this has still got to go be a win. I mean, there is 0-2 is a bad place that you don't want to be operating from. I think that this needs to be a really big day for Robert Saleh. His unit, I think, is going to have to carry the load as much as any running back or any offensive player making up for the loss of George Kittle. I think that even more specifically, Chris Kocurek, who is the defensive line coach, has to make sure his guys are eaten this weekend. I know that we've talked about it so many times, it feels like we're repeating ourselves, but this defense's strength is its defensive line, and it needs to be starting Sunday, because I don't know how many points you're going to put up there.
I also want to remind anybody who's starting to feel like the 49ers are screwed is that the Jets are also missing their best running back and their best wide receiver. Mm-hmm. You know, their best tight end is still living as far as we know, but this is basically going to be a game between two teams that are almost weaponless, and you have to decide which of those teams' remaining weapons ought to be better. And I still think it ought to be San Francisco, but it's more of an argument than it was before.
I don't really think it is. If we're having the, I'm not saying this game isn't worrisome at all, but if we're talking about the skill position players, even down this far, you got the edge over a Jets team down Jamison Crowder. I really think you do. And I mean, part of that, I suppose, comes down to the question of, do you believe the Niners have the edge at quarterback? So do you?
I do. I mean, at this particular time, yes, I do. I just, look, there's a lot that is unlucky going into this game. The lucky thing is it's the New York Jets, who are suffering too. If the 49ers had to go up against, with all due respect, a team that scared people, a team that was supposed to go somewhere and do something this year, all bets would be off this weekend. I mean, it is going to be either rough sledding and closer than you think it's going to be, or a much better football team, even with depth chart being tested, is going to walk away the winner. You can't even say it's like styles. It's who can get through this the healthiest enough, who can just get the job done in front of them. Brian Baldinger is going to join us today. We're looking forward to that conversation. Nick Ferguson, who played in the NFL, was a 49er secondary coach, played alongside John Lynch. He is a radio show host in Denver and just a friend of the show. So we're going to have him on a little bit later on today. A couple of other things in store, Okolsky's Corner on a Friday. We will have our best guest of the week at one point today to run past you. And look at what the world has really given us. NFL injury anxieties notwithstanding. Happy New Year, 5781, everyone, if you observe. La Shana Tova.
Thank you.
I mean, yeah, absolutely.
Shana Tova.
La Shana Tova. I bet the pronunciation needs a little work, but the love of Noodle Kugel is right where it's supposed to be. Happy New Year, if you do indeed observe. NFL Week 2, not only are the Niners at the Jets, but we got the Raiders playing their first game in Vegas. That's a touch interesting for a handful of football fans here in the Bay Area. There's no doubt about that. We even dared to have a fun Thursday night football game last night. How about that? What audacity we had with that one. That was a good game. That was a fun game.
It was a fun game. It wasn't a good game. You could still see how bad both those teams are by the fact that Cincinnati threw the ball 61 times. That's basically a statement that says, A, we don't like our running backs, and B, we got 88 plays off and we still lost and actually only had the lead with the opening field goal. I mean, Cincinnati may have revealed themselves as having the worst defense in football.
Maybe. On the other hand, the Browns have some talent, right? And those were the guys that made some plays. So maybe this was a sign that the Browns are not as lost as they looked last week.
The Browns are bad. The Bengals are bad. They're going to be bad for the rest of the year. But if you're just watching Cincinnati football, you're watching the quarterback. That's all you care about right now. That quarterback looks like a player.
Yeah.
That quarterback looks like a player. I like Joe Burrow and Baker Mayfield. He had the I got a coach game that I think everyone was desperate to see if you're a Browns fan. Look, here's the deal. When the other team is bad, you got to look good. You're not good unless you can look good against other good teams. So the Browns in the grand spectrum of good are no good compared to the Baltimore Ravens. But they looked good enough to beat a bad team. And that means that's progress for a franchise that is that bad itself.
But they may have figured out what their offensive philosophy ought to be, because a week ago they threw the ball all over the place and looked dreadful doing it again against a much better team. But they ran the ball 35 times and threw it 23. I mean, Nick Chubb was jaw-droppingly good, and Kareem Hunt was just about as good. I think Cleveland, for all the stuff we talk about, Baker Mayfield this and Odell Beckham that, their strength might be their running game.
There's no doubt that that's what their strength is. They've got two of the best running backs in all of football. That is the best probably combined backfield. Very complementary styles in the two players. And they ran to victory last night. There was no doubt about it. The Bay Bridge Series starts tonight, gentlemen. We get both teams looking like they're postseason bound. We expected the A's to do that. The San Francisco Giants were not expected to be in that conversation, yet here they are. Western Conference Finals, Game 1, Lakers and Nuggets tonight. You got LeBron James looking to flex an MVP grudge. Giannis named back-to-back MVP today. We will put that into the proper compartment historically. And it is a short list of guys who have won two back-to-back MVPs in the history of basketball, and Giannis now finds himself on that list. The Stanley Cup starts tomorrow. The U.S. Open is happening at Wingfoot. Like, this is a crazy time of the year. It is a hell of a Friday show, and we're glad to have you with us. 888-957-9570 is our number. No George Kittle is the big news that we just learned about. No Kittle for the 49ers going into the game. I tell you, the fact that he played that entire second half, I like it even less now. I'm not saying that anyone is bordering on negligent there, but he wasn't used. He couldn't go. He couldn't play, even though he was out there. I don't like George Kittle a decoy, especially if maybe he did something to extra aggravate what you'd call a sprained knee in a half of football where he was just not supposed to be out there. I mean, look, Niners got bigger problems than worrying about who made that call, but they need George Kittle to be something this year, certainly to return to the Super Bowl to beat the New York Jets. I guess we find out this weekend. All guests on 95.7 The Game appear on the Bay Area Chevy Dealers guest line. Visit BayAreaChevroletDealers.com to find a dealer nearest you. We got a great show for you this afternoon. We're also brought to you by Safeway. They got a BOGO sale to buy one, get one free. Dreyer's ice cream, Nabisco family size cookies and crackers, including Oreos, Wheat Thins, Triscuits, Pepperidge Farm Goldfish. I do love me some Pepperidge Farm Goldfish. Safeway, come on in and explore. We are just underway. Damon Ratto and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game.
Damon Ratto and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
No George Kittle, as the San Francisco 49ers get ready to head to the New York Jets. George Kittle has been ruled out. We all know that Richard Sherman is out of this game. Kittle, that's a little bit of a surprise and a concern, though. It was said that, you know, he's the kind of guy, if he didn't practice all week long, that doesn't necessarily mean that he wasn't going to play, but what do you know? The don't practice, can't play rule kind of rears its head once again. Damon Radowinkolsky, what an interesting weekend. We got all sorts of sports firing from different angles here. One of the things, though, we're doing each and every Friday, though, right at the quarter hour, coming out of our first break of every hour, is ask the four big questions. Kolsky put together the four big questions last week. I have been tasked with putting the four big questions together for next week, which means, Ray Ratto, you have four big questions about this game. Obviously, I think you wrote these questions down before you knew George Kittle was out. Let's see if that changes anything. What, as you look at it, Ray, is the big question confronting the 49ers head in this game?
Can the 49ers go 0-16?
No.
No, that's not it. Kyle Shanahan, for all the talk about him being a run-first coach, has actually run more than he's passed only three times in his last 13 games. And two of those were the two playoff games last year before the Super Bowl. Are we just misreading him? And are the Jets the kind of team he would want to restore that kind of 60% run ratio with?
That's a good question. And I think the
answer... It's not really. No, Mets were much better last week.
No. I like that because I think that the answers we might have given you about an hour ago just changed a little bit. And looking to throw the ball around is what all offensive geniuses, I think, want to do to show you the mismatches that they can create. And I know that we looked at some film of Dante Pettis running wide open today that makes us kind of reevaluate what his contribution was last week. Jimmy's just not seeing guys who are open. And Pettis, as much as we criticize him, was one of those guys last week. But I don't think this is the week that Kyle Shanahan is going to find let's whip it around Jesus, if you will, because it is pack it in, possession, have your defense dictate the afternoon, run the ball, kill the clock, smother the New York Jets, especially without George Kittle. But it is interesting. This team has a reputation of run, and three times in the last 13 is the only times where they've fallen in love with a run. But I guess when you do it in the postseason, it feels like that more defines who you are or the situation you find yourself in, I guess, dictates that. But yeah, I think that Shanahan will look to open it up eventually, but not this week.
I think you still open it up this week. And we'll talk to people. I mean, Baldy will have good answers on this, but the Jets, if they have anything, have a run defense. Their offense is devoid of all their skill players. They're all hurt. The quarterback is questionable. The offensive line is brand new. The secondary on defense is terrible, but they do a decent job against the run. And so, I think they are going to throw it around this week, actually. And you know what else? I do kind of think you guys have been misjudging Kyle Shanahan, and I've kind of been saying this, that everyone kind of fell under the impression that because they ran the ball so well last year, that Kyle Shanahan, all things being equal, would prefer to just run the ball. And I don't necessarily think that's the case, because in plenty of his other stops as an offensive coordinator, he threw the ball a ton. So I'm not sure he has a hard preference either way, but I do think the perception that, like, if he can have his druthers, Kyle Shanahan will just run it to death is a little bit misguided.
I think with this roster, which he built, frankly, he does prefer to run the ball more because that's sort of what he built. And the first 7 weeks of the year, that's all he did, is he ran the ball a lot. I think if he wants to be the kind of coach you're talking about, as a general manager, he's got to, you know, either create more targets or fix the quarterback or replace the quarterback.
Well, right.
Because this does not look like the kind of team that does its best work when the ball's in the air a lot. And I know that's kind of a misleading stat because typically teams that throw the ball more lose to teams that run the ball more because they're behind. But it might be, I mean, and you know, we're getting granular about a year that's already behind us, but when the schedule toughened, he did throw the ball more. And that's not disputable. I mean, he threw the ball a lot more in the second half. And the only game in which he really didn't was Baltimore. And I think maybe what we're finding, and you may well be right, but, you know, everything that he shows us is that this roster makes him feel more comfortable about his running game than his passing game.
Well, except for the stat that you just gave me or gave us earlier today, that 10 of the last 13 games they've passed more than run. And beyond that, look, today's roster with all the injuries and Jimmy Garoppolo coming off one of the worst games he's had doesn't feel like a team that's excited about passing. On the other hand, can I present to you a football team that's paying its quarterback $27 million? It's tight end, the most a tight end has ever been paid, and drafted wide receivers in the first two rounds every year that he's been here. So he's certainly put resources towards the passing game. There's no disputing that.
I don't think that those resources have necessarily rewarded him with the entire depth and breadth of the playbook that he really wants to run. I mean, remember earlier this week, I think we all agreed on this. All the best coaches play the hand that they're dealt. They don't insist on doing it their way, even though the personnel doesn't suggest, you know, that it's built to do it that way. I think Kyle Shanahan will do what his team's talent allows him to do as a coach. And in terms of throwing the football, there are two guys out there who are going to do more to change that conversation than any other two guys in the room. And it's obviously Jimmy Garoppolo and Brandon Ayuk. Like you said, he is investing in a passing game. That investment beyond Kittle hasn't necessarily paid off yet, or it's not been an investment that you can take to the bank. We all like Debo. Hopefully he goes and looks as good as his promise suggests. Jalen Hurd. Gosh, at this point, if he ever shows up and contributes based on two really bad injuries to just take the beginning of his career and snap it in half, that's not good. But there's no doubt he would love the kind of offense that can do whatever he needs it to do in whatever moment he needs to do it in. He's working towards that. He's building towards that, but he doesn't have it yet. And if the quarterback doesn't develop greatly this year, he might be looking for that next quarterback if he thinks – another guy can do what I'm getting out of Jimmy Garoppolo. So,
I mean, I think also with that Garoppolo equation, so if we look at Garoppolo, undeniably, we've seen some really good moments over the course of his couple of years with the Niners. That to use him as an example, because he is the backup quarterback, for instance, Nick Mullins could not do some of the things we've seen Jimmy Garoppolo do. But if Garoppolo is also going to be subject to games filled with errors and inaccuracy, I do wonder if Kyle Shanahan wouldn't rather just take his chances with Nick Mullen for a year while he drafts and develops a new guy or something of that vein. Because there's a balancing act of, would I rather just have consistent mediocrity than flashes of brilliance but also flashes of disaster?
And more than ever before, price point matters.
Yep,
it really does, and I've always said that every quarterback in the league is running a race. How quickly can you learn the playbook before your body gets broken by the NFL? That's the race that every QB was running since the dawn of time. It feels like now there's almost a second race that he is running against his own front office, because it's a copycat league, and the amount of teams that have had recent success going to and winning Super Bowls with quarterbacks on rookie deals is the envy of every GM's front office. So not only is a quarterback running a race between his ability to absorb the playbook and actually survive football games and figure it all out and remain healthy while you're figuring it all out. But Jimmy is now running the salary cap race where the question, like you were just saying, Matt, does his production or coaching staff confidence in him outweigh what you would get from a quarterback on a rookie deal? Knowing that you'd be leaving a little spectacular moment on the table, but would you be willing to leave, you know, $20 million of cap room on the table with it? That's a trade-off that some teams are going to make, especially the teams that are smart, who think that I got a coach who can get it out of anybody, which John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan, they think that they're those guys.
Let me make a goofy argument example and just throw it out to both of you guys right now, okay? Let's say I offer you, as your offense, exactly what the Niners have going into Sunday, okay? So Debo's not there. Ayuk is, and no George Kittle. You can have that, or you can have Nick Mullins at quarterback, but I'm also going to give you Allen Robinson. Which offense do you want? Because that's the money. There's where the money goes.
That's. Did you hear my dramatic breath? I hope it hit the microphone to indicate deeply I was thinking about that. But here's the thing. That's a question that if Jimmy had just played better in week one, we're not asking. But I guess that's the overreaction world that we're living in. When the overreaction isn't based on an outcome, but on the tendencies that we all agreed should have been cleaned up. The happy feet, the making. Look, that Dante Pettis video that we saw today. Who shared that?
It's Akash Anavaranthan, I believe is how his name is pronounced.
Anavaranthian, whatever is Leviathan. It's a great name. I just cannot pronounce it like so many great names in sports. But he's doing a really nice job as a young guy out there carving his name, covering the 49ers. And he shared some film from the All-22 where, I mean, I'm not saying that anybody here owes Dante Pettis an apology because, Dante, what have you done for me lately? The answer is dyed your hair blue and kind of sucked. But he was open. There were opportunities to get him an incredibly catchable ball in space without worry, and Jimmy did not take them. If Jimmy isn't making that throw 2-3 more weeks down the road, the questions are going to be for real. It's not going to be sports talk radio segments, can the Niners do better? It's going to be the conversation that Shanahan is having with himself in his own mind, knowing that Parag Marate gave him a built-in pull this lever in case of emergency out with Garoppolo.
I mean, the thing that just gives me pause is, you know, we're talking about a guy who got them to within 10 minutes of a Super Bowl parade. And I just don't get a sense that Kyle Shanahan's head is in that space nearly as much as other people think it is.
An accurate description, though? Did he get them?
Yeah, I think, well, I wouldn't have said it if I didn't think it was accurate.
But, I mean, do you feel like he was in the top five most important players in getting them to that point?
I think he was among them.
Okay.
I mean, he wasn't harming them in any material way. And really, you know, the throw to Sanders that everybody, you know, keeps ranting about is not an easy throw for most quarterbacks to make. So the question here is, at least to my mind, is Jimmy Garoppolo an above-average quarterback in the National Football League? Based on 1 week, last week, no. Based on almost all of last year, clearly yes. So, you know, Does one terrible game undo all of that? And I'm not convinced it does. And I'm not convinced that the people at 49-49 believe that either. And I think it's going to take a while for them to come off their theory.
No, there's more evidence of not taking that step forward needs to be presented than just the first four quarters of football against a who knows how good they are Arizona team. But if this week is full of him being nervous in the pocket, happy feet, not throwing the ball out of bounds, taking bad sacks. If it's him not throwing to clearly open second, third receivers in his progressions against a team that is as meh as the New York Jets, And then after another week of just working on it in West Virginia and then going back, and then it's just meh again against the Giants. You know, how many meh do you really want to see out of your quarterback before you start thinking, if we agree he's above average, what can I get from what would I do with better than above average? I mean, if above average is where he tops out, he's a dead man walking right now. Period and end of story. Jimmy Garoppolo needs to be a lot better than above average, and at times he was last year. First time he ever started 16 games his team's in the Super Bowl. That's a really good thing. But I do remember you, Ray, saying throughout the entire playoffs, like, he doesn't even need to be there. They're just running the ball. And then, like, he needs to be the kind of guy that Kyle Shanahan thinks can go win a Super Bowl. That's what you need, man. It's hard to win a Super Bowl with a role player or a game manager unless you have the single greatest rushing attack that has ever been played and a defense that comes out and hits you with a sledgehammer each and every week, and then you can Trent Dilfer yourself to a title. That's not what Kyle Shanahan's going to do, and honestly, that's not good enough around here. It's not. That's not why Niners fans go and buy tickets to watch game managers slug it through and win 14-12 every week. That's just not what sells around here. So there is, well, look, there's pressure on everybody in this league. There's always going to be pressure on the Niners quarterback, but it is like, you know, Jimmy, if this is what you're going to be, show it.
And I just don't, you could go from slightly above average to slightly below average very quickly in this league. And I have a feeling if we went through just the quarterbacks right now and hazarded some guesses, we would find him right in that range of 15 or so. And I think we would put him there even if we expected him to bounce back from an ugly week one. Because like Ray said, I mean, if we're just judging on 1 week, obviously he's not an average quarterback. He's clearly below average. But I don't think anyone is suggesting we're judging him on 1 week.
No,
I think what we're suggesting is the lack of progression we saw in that 1 week leads us to at least the discussion of the fact that if there continues to not be any progression, if he continues to look below average, then you have the option of moving on from him relatively pain-free at the end of the year. So it's something that will certainly be considered.
What do you think of Jimmy? It's a question that needs to stop being asked. And only his performances can stop that question from being asked. He is way too far down the road in his career to be in the, you know, Gardner Minshew. What do you think? Are you looking at a real quarterback? Is he a pro? Is he a franchise guy? Like, Gardner Minshew has been here for 5 minutes. So it's an appropriate question for him. Jimmy is not in his first 5 minutes. He's not in his second 5 minutes. He's not in his third 5 minutes, man. He is at least 20 minutes into his career, if we're going to do it in 5 minute increments, right? Like, he has been around long enough to where if this is who you are, this is who you will be. And if you're looking for the game that will represent that big step forward, it hasn't been seen yet. And if I'm Jimmy Garoppolo, that's the only thing that keeps me up at night. Am I getting better to the point where Kyle Shanahan looks at me and thinks, I can't do much better than that, so I'm sticking with him? And I don't know what that would take. Dreadful performances on
third
down. I
think it takes some consistency.
Down. Yeah.
I think consistency is the big issue here. Almost all the problems we saw against Arizona were issues of accuracy and timing. And we've seen him be accurate and on time in the past, so we know he's capable of that. But if it's going to be a thing where you can't trust it, and every three or four games you get an inaccurate late mess, that's going to be a problem.
888-957-9570 is a number. Before we go back for Ray, see, Ray, look how good your question was. 16 minutes, we're worried about this question. That's a good question if it takes 16 minutes to answer it.
Garoppolo, this topic of Garoppolo is kind of a low bar to clear.
Hey, but what are we, hurdlers? What do you think it is we're doing?
I'm just saying,
here?
Let's see how the day plays out before we start saying whether this was a good idea or not.
We'll find out. Dave in San Jose, welcome to 95.7 The Game. Dave, hello.
What's going on? I think you guys are on point with just about everything, and I think the biggest point that I actually just agreed with that I was going to bring up is I think Jimmy's problem is inconsistency. And that comes from, we'll see games where Jimmy was great, and that's consistent, and then all of a sudden he has a terrible game. And then we go back to that question. But my question for you guys is, if KB's open and you're missing him, I have a problem with it. Even with Trent Taylor, if you're getting open and he's not hitting you, I have a problem because we know Trent Taylor can catch. If Dante Pettis is open, I don't know that he's built any trust with Jimmy because last season we saw plenty of times where Dante Pettis either caused an interception or he didn't instantly turn into defender or he was scared of contact, all those situations that we've seen 1,000 times. So Jimmy might be looking at him and going, nope, I'm not doing it.
David, you know what, though? It's a totally fair point. You're right about that. But my counter would be beggars can't be choosers.
That's right. The thing is, the caller's totally right. That is an understandable human emotion to have. But if you're a top quarterback in this league, you put it on him and hope he makes the play this time. And if he doesn't, you get pissed and you hope you get a better receiver next time. But that's what you had. And he was wide open. I mean, I'm telling you, go to Akash Anavaranthan's Twitter and look at how open Dante Pettis was over and over and over again. It's hard to ignore. You'd think by the third or fourth time, Jimmy would have said, you know what, let's give him a chance. And the one chance he did give him was thrown late, so by the time it got there, it appeared like he had been in double coverage when, you know, he had been streaking open across the middle of the field for several seconds. And to be fair, Dante Pettis made no effort on it. So I get it. There's problems there. But at a certain point, if that's who you have, throw it to him. And if he pops it up into the hands of a defender, we all know that's on him. No one's blaming that on you.
There were moments where Pettis split defenders, and it looked like he had created a little bit of an open window. But still, if you didn't trust him to go through that window and make a play for you, okay. There were a few other plays in there where it's a straight up, he sat down, turned around, and button hooked for Jimmy. And there wasn't a corner or a defender within 8 yards of him. And Jimmy just didn't even bother looking. I mean, he's sitting there wide open in space, not moving, saying, I'm open. And Garoppolo gave him the equivalent of car was coming do-over, like didn't even bother looking. So is that a trust issue? Is that a read issue? Is that a progression issue? Is it a bifocals issue? Let's hope not. JP in Berkeley are on 95.7 The Game. Hello, JP.
Hello. I just have a couple of comments for you gentlemen. First of all, how about getting some receivers? Throw Pettis out. He's not a receiver in the NFL. He'll be gone, and he won't ever come up again. But I understand this last game and Garoppolo, he without any OTAs, with this being a COVID year, I'm giving some excuses here, but I really don't want to because a professional quarterback should be able to hit an open receiver. But you guys are jumping on Garoppolo, and when you should be jumping on is Pettis, Bourne, and a few other of these receivers they pick up from the trash heap. When Seattle goes and gets Metcalf, and Arizona goes and gets the best receiver in the business. And what are we doing? Playing with
you're Pettis. Drafting receivers in the first round is what you're doing. Like, I just – Niner fans, you have to realize they are committing resources. You're paying the best receiving tight end in football a boatload of money, and you're drafting receivers in the first and second round year after year. Those guys are hurt, so Dante Pettis is out there. But also, you know, and again, Pettis deserves a lot of the criticism he gets because it's not just one game. Kendrick Bourne has been a solid depth receiver for this team his entire career. He's made third down plays when he's been asked to do so in the past. He scored touchdowns at a surprising rate for a guy with his usage, and he was open all day. So I'm not going to trash Kendrick Bourne.
The 49ers played 2 games last year without George Kittle in weeks 10 and 11. We'll tell you what they did in those games when we come on back, because the next game is without George Kittle. That game against the New York Jets, no Sherman, no Kittle. Okay. Good luck. Good luck with that. The good news is Brandon Ayuk is going to make his professional debut, and if there were ever a time for a young receiver to finally live up to that first-round draft billing, first-round pick, of the first wide receiver that you picked in the first round. All respect to Javon Kinlaw is what I'm trying to say. I know that he was the first pick. But man, oh man, oh man, he can't have one of those showed up well on the Pro Football Focus grading things. He needs to show up on third down. He needs to show up in the end zone. Big game, big afternoon for Brandon Ayuk. Go be a star in New York, kid. It'll be good for your business. 888-957-9570. More calls, and we're going to dive into the Bay Bridge series just a little bit when we come on back. Our first guest coming up at 3 o'clock, one of the best guests out there. We're going to be joined by Brian Baldinger here on 95.7 The Game. Also, we got to let you know that you can go to 95.7thegame.com right now and see the video that my wife was nice enough to shoot of the brisket that we did, the American River Farms brisket, the Snake River Farms of the American Wagyu beef. Oh, my God, it was so delicious. It was an awful lot of fun to do that. We want to thank Zenny, the official eyewear, the 49ers, Snake River Farms. Elevate your tailgate. Check out the series right now on 957thegame.com. We are brought to you by Fremont Bank, full-service banking, no compromises.
Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
Oh, in under 15 minutes, Brian Baldinger joins us for his weekly conversation when it comes to learning the game of football. Following Brian Baldinger is going to do more for you than just about any other Twitter account. His Baldy breakdowns are just A-plus film study and appreciation of what it takes to be a player in this league. There ain't nothing easy about it. And even though it looked easy on paper, got to go beat the New York Jets. It's never a tough assignment in football. It gets tougher. No George Kittle. That's what we learned today. No Richard Sherman is what we learned earlier in the week. No problem. Hopefully that's the way it is for the San Francisco 49ers going to New York. We spoke with Bob Wasusian yesterday here on Damon Ratto and Kolsky, and here is what Bob had to say about just how bad the New York Jets were. This highlight package is called The Best of the Worst of the Jets.
Well, if he just turns on the tape from the game against Buffalo, I'm not 100% sure what he would identify as the greatest strength. He would probably find plenty of weaknesses. That was a bad performance for them. You know, they were down 21-0. Josh Allen fumbled twice, and the Bills missed two field goals. So it could have been 40-0 at halftime. It was 21-3. It was non-competitive. I mean, the Jets were 3 and out on their first three possessions. They couldn't run the ball. You know, Le'Veon Bell got hurt. They turned it over. It was not a good performance. It was a non-competitive performance overall. I worry about their physicality at linebacker. They're just not physical. You know, between the tackles, they're very blockable.
Okay, how's Sam Ficken, the kicker?
He's consistent. He's been good. I guess we're going to lean on that, right? And they got a rookie punter that they drafted. He had a nuclear leg. He got plenty of opportunities opening day to show it. So, yeah, special teams was okay, I guess.
Special teams was okay, I guess. That is not exactly a house organ as much as it is like a house slide trombone as a broadcast. Wah, wah is basically his description of the team that signs his paycheck. Bob Wasusian, got to love the honesty. By the way, let me correct my mistake. Guess who's joining us at 3 o'clock? It's Nick Ferguson, Brian Baldinger at 4 o'clock. That's how it's going to go down. So we're going to go Ferguson, then Baldinger at 4 o'clock. Brace yourselves.
Reverse alphabetical order.
Reverse alphabetical. Exactly. That's what it is. So, the Jets suck. They stink on ice. That's what their broadcaster told us.
That would be a great podcast from like a Jets blog. So the Jets suck.
Yeah. Click here to subscribe. Don't forget to leave your review. But
it just reminds me that New York might be the last place in America where broadcasters, if they want to, can rip their team. Nowhere else, and I know this from listening to all sorts of games from all sorts of places on Sirius, almost every other place, it's, well, we're down 31-3, but boy, we're really working hard. No, people don't want to hear that. They actually want to hear what Bob Wischusen said, because the one thing that is dying faster than anything else in sports is the idea of the play-by-play guy as the voice of the fan, telling him this is what's happening and this is why it's not happening well. And you almost get that nowhere else. And, I mean, hats off to him, because he's been there long enough, and he's had plenty of bad Jets teams to rip. So I'm sure this wasn't the first time I don't think he snapped when he talked to us the other day.
No, not at all. And at a certain point, like, you can either describe what you're seeing or invent stuff. And I don't think Jets fans are too surprised at this point.
No, but it's always, you always have somebody in marketing just sitting there going, no. We're pimping the brand here. Well, your brand is awful.
By the way,
there's a reason why they wear green. It makes you sick.
Allow me to pimp the brand. When we're like, hey, we need someone to talk about the Jets with, we get a really good play-by-play guy in Bob Wischusen. When Sean Salisbury wants someone to talk about the Jets with, he goes and gets Joe Willie Namath, who is going to join Sean Salisbury tonight at 6 o'clock here on 95.7 The Game. That's pull. I need to talk about the Jets. Who should I get? Go get me Joe Namath. Not bad.
Yeah.
Not bad, Sean Salisbury.
Being a former NFL quarterback pays off, apparently.
Apparently.
Also, he wanted to go through all the medley of the Jets' greatest hit.
Hey, that one finger. That was a finger wagging in the air. We got one. We got one. That is the history of the New York Jets, no doubt about it.
He only got Namath because he couldn't get Fireman Ed.
Unavailable. 888-957-9570 is the number. A couple of calls before we're joined by Nick Ferguson here on 95.7 The Game. This is Richard, Yuba City. Hello, Richard.
Hey, gentlemen, how you doing today?
Very well. Yourself?
Good. So here's my take on all this. In the 80s, I made a lot of money watching Bill Walsh and Joe Montana. And the one thing I can remember sitting at home is, and I'm sure a lot of people can remember this, is we were all, even as people at home, we knew that Joe Montana and Bill Walsh was on the same page. Just everything they did, we could almost call the plays from home. Now, I mean, you watch this coach now, Shanahan. Let's see what he's done. Every time he's been in a big position, he don't put his team in the position to win. I feel in my heart, this is me, that they're just not on the same page. Garoppolo's a decent quarterback. He's not the best, but he got us to the Super Bowl. But the one thing that I did notice, though, is maybe Bill Belichick did know something about Garoppolo when he let him go. Because if you remember, everybody said, oh, well, man, why did he do this? Where's the catch? What's the catch? Well, maybe he knows something we don't know. I'll take your comments off here. Thank you.
Richard, thank you. Here's the thing. Whenever you compare a coach and a quarterback to Bill Walsh and Joe Montana, it's basically like comparing an interior painter to, well, you know, look at what Michelangelo did to the Sistine Chapel ceiling. How come we can't do that around here? Okay, that's the best of 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 the best that ever did it together.
Eggshell white? Give me God touching someone.
So,
on a field of eggshell white.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough when that's the comparison point, and that's why we always say, you know, the Niner quarterback is one of the toughest positions in sports, because the standard is Joe Montana, and if not Joe Montana, then Steve Young. And if that's the standard, it's just not going to get met very often, if perhaps ever again. But in response to a couple specific things that the caller said, the reason Bill Belichick got rid of Jimmy Garoppolo was financial and contractual, period. It had nothing to do with anything Garoppolo did or did not have. If Garoppolo had been better, Belichick still would have had to get rid of him, because
I would
Brady
also
was
suggest
there.
That there was a touch of politics in there between Kraft and a struggle for power with Belichick. Like, it was a weird time in New England.
Yes, but it wasn't about Jimmy Garoppolo, the player. Because I don't even think, you know, Bill Belichick knew more than anyone else, but you never really know until a guy gets a little bit of playing time under his belt in real NFL games. So I don't think that was an issue with Belichick for sure. That is one thing I would say. And, you know, as far as being on the same page, I don't think there's any reason to think they're not on the same page, because, again, the plays seemed to work, at least on Sunday. The plays looked like they worked. The missing ingredient was accuracy or timing. In almost all of the missed passes that I've looked at, certainly on the All-22, The problem is Jimmy either doesn't see an open man or doesn't hit that open man. And again, this is not to throw Jimmy out after one bad week, but I do think it's our job to talk about those things, and he struggled mightily in those areas in that game.
Yeah, it's an absurdity in my mind to say they're not on the same page. And Matt, you already said it, so I don't even really have to reiterate it. It's just, he wasn't accurate. He wasn't accurate. And you can say, you know, I mean, I'm not going to, you know, give Pettis a walk for not trying on that one ball, because part of your job is to get to the ball. But this was not, by any standard, to me, a question of a lack of trust between the coach and the quarterback or the quarterback and the coach. This was a bad day. This was an above average starter in a baseball game not being able to get out of the third. Now, we'll see if this is now an above average starter who's about to have a bad year. We don't know yet. But that was not a good performance. And it largely, and I think we said this on Monday, it was it's far more mechanical than it is, tactical or strategic. It's just he didn't hit guys when they needed to be hit.
Carlito and Alameda, you're on 95.7 The Game. Hello.
Hi. Yeah, I think what it comes down to is who they were playing in the Super Bowl. I mean, Garoppolo was playing against a superstar quarterback who actually is an extremely high caliber, amazing guy. And next to somebody like that, I think Garoppolo probably is average or below average. And I mean, that was his one opportunity to win. And when you're playing against a team like that, against a quarterback like that, it's very difficult. I don't see him going back to the Super Bowl again.
I mean, here's the thing, Carlito. He outplayed. He was outplaying Patrick Mahomes until the last 7 minutes of that game, where he hit Sammy Watkins and Tyreek Hill on two of the biggest passes in the history of the Kansas City Chiefs organization. I mean,
but the last 2 minutes of the game is the most important part of the game.
No doubt. Oh, look, no doubt. I am not arguing with you. I'm not saying that he didn't lose to a superior player, because I think Patrick Mahomes is basically the superior of every single quarterback in football right now. I believe Nick is ready to go, which means it's time to welcome everyone to your 3 o'clock hour.
You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, a radio.com sports station.
He is a former secondary coach with the 49ers. He played for four seasons next to John Lynch in Denver, and he was a JETS Jets as well, along with being a friend of the show and a talk show host in Denver. Nick Ferguson, good enough to join us here on Damon Ratto and Kolsky once again. Nick, how are you, man? Hopefully you're doing well.
You listen, I'm doing well, but you know who's not doing well? The Denver Broncos or the San Francisco 49ers when it comes to star players being injured. So let's start there.
No kidding. George Kittle today will not be playing on Sunday. We already knew that Richard Sherman wasn't going to go. Since you started with injuries, let's just talk about how the New York Jets receiving core, especially without Jamison Crowder, isn't exactly built to put the fear of God into NFL secondaries. But the 49ers are already working with their second and third guys as their starters, Emmanuel Mosley and Akilah Witherspoon. Let me just say this. If there was a game where the two of you guys had to play without Richard Sherman, this kind of feels like that game. It's bad that Richard Sherman can't go, but at least it's the Jets for Witherspoon and Mosley.
Well, yeah, I guess the football gods have shined down on Kyle Shanahan and the 49ers in week two, because you're absolutely right. I mean, the Jets, to be totally honest, they were not really a good team, and there was a lot of talk coming out of New York whether, you know, Adam Gase will maintain his job to the end of the season. That still is yet to be determined, but when you look at Akilah Witherspoon is coming out of concussion protocol, he has all the size, the speed, and everything that you want. The only part of this game that's missing is the physicality that Richard Sherman would bring to the game. If Akello can fix that part of it, it'd be great. I mean, I was there with both Akello and Richard Sherman, so I know what both of those guys can do. I know how the defense is definitely going to miss him, but Emmanuel Moseley stepped into the role last year. He ended up starting in the Super Bowl. So I have a lot of faith in him as an undrafted player that he can go out there and get the job done. But facing a Jets team with a struggling quarterback and Sam Darnold, I mean, you look at Le'Veon Bell. He was placed on IR. So LaMichael Perine is going to probably get his first opportunity to play the game. But I still like the San Francisco 49ers defense. I mean, Dee Ford is somewhat of a question mark, which will put a lot of pressure on Nick Bosa. But I got a lot of faith and confidence in Robert Saleh that he'll have those guys geared up and ready to play.
Okay, let's ask the philosophical question then, since you brought it up in your own intro. What's the more psychologically damaging injury to the team involved? George Kittle of the 49ers or Von Miller to the Cowboys or to the Broncos?
I would say Von Miller. And the reason I would go with Von because when you
O'Reilly. Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.